I've been asked either after class or occasionally in private or more private conversations, I've been asked essentially the same question quite a few times. And I realize it's a very important issue to address for all devotees, and it may not be as obvious as we think. When I'm talking to people trying to inspire them to come onto the spiritual path, we naturally talk about an increasing sense of happiness, an increasing sense of peace. And of course, when we're trying to persuade people to learn to meditate and then continue to meditate, we try to make the idea of meditation as attractive as possible. It would be very hard to lure people into meditation by promising them that this will be difficult and unpleasant. You know, please come learn to do Kriya, you won't enjoy it at all. That's really not going to take us anywhere. Nor is that accurate. There's also a very interesting fact about the spiritual life, and I was talking to a small group yesterday morning, but I'll repeat it here for you. Actually, it wasn't then. It was somewhere else, but it doesn't matter. Swami Kriyananda he used to read occasionally. He would read fiction. When he was traveling, he would go to the bookstore, he would buy a novel to read on the airplane. For some time now, he no longer reads other people's books like that. But whenever he would pick up a book in the bookstore, a story, he would always go to the last and read the last 5 or 6 pages before he would decide whether he would buy it or not. And we sort of had a conversation about that once, and I said, how can you, you know how it ends? How can you then enjoy the story? He gave me 2 answers. One was very poignant. He said, I've experienced enough sorrow and witnessed enough sorrow in the world that I don't want to read a book that ends sadly. I only want to read a book that has a happy ending, and so I want to know if it has a happy ending. I said, but doesn't it spoil it for you to have already read it? He said, no, as a writer, he said, I'm intrigued to see how they get there. So he follows it like that. Now, the point I want to talk about is reading the end of the book and then having to go back to the beginning. Very often on the spiritual path, when God is trying to court us, he behaves like many of us behave during the time that we're being courted. Isn't it true that when you were trying to win your husband or your wife and you always dressed perfectly, you brought gifts, everything was just perfect, and then later on, as the years pass, you become a little careless, perhaps, a little forgetful. It's not a good plan. I don't recommend it. But nonetheless, this is what happens because we're sort of back at the beginning of the story. We have to run through the whole thing. So often on the spiritual path, God will give you a lot of happy experiences right at the start just to lure you in. Just to promise you that this is where you're going and this is what's going to happen to you. It doesn't happen to everyone, but I'm astonished by how many people see the spiritual eye in their first meditation. Just, oh yes, that, yes, there it is, right. Not having any idea, really, that it's a very deep level of accomplishment. But then what happens after we read the end of the story and we realize the book is going to come out happy, then God sends us back to page 1. And sometimes from page 1 to that happy ending, there's a lot of pages in there. Some books are skinny, but many of them are quite fat. And so we sometimes have the idea that if the effortless reward that sometimes accompanies the beginning of the spiritual path, or even what you might call the honeymoon period, where you're just so eager about everything. I've mentioned that one of the things that Yogananda said about the joy of planting self-realization in America was that in India they know how hard it is to realize God, and so not that many people want to try. In America, they have no idea that it's difficult. And so they say, realizing God, sure, we can do it. And there's just this great enthusiasm that in fact brings very positive results. But in our own spiritual life, there often comes a point, whether it comes soon or whether it comes later, where we realize that there are a lot of pages between my first Kriya initiation, my first meditation class, my first Raja Yoga class, and the promise that has been given to me of the kind of freedom that meditation can bring. I know when I first came onto the spiritual path and I read about samadhi and cosmic consciousness and complete freedom from karma, I thought 2-3 years, that's it. You know, I was a typical American. And I was a little surprised in 2 or 3 years to not find myself where I thought I might be, but by then I'd become more sensible. Now, I'm not saying any of this to discourage you, but one of the things that's very important on the spiritual path is to understand what is normal. Because if you don't know what is normal, you can get very, very confused about whether or not it's actually working for you. Anxiety sets in, lack of dedication, just confusion and concern of all kinds. This, above all, is the reason why satsang is so important. Because if you are constantly coming back into the company, both of your peers who are working with you, and as you have in this case, people who are more experienced even than yourselves, you always get to find out, oh, this is just what happens. Another way to think about it is like this. For some reason, I've always been fascinated by mountaineering books. I've never come close to any kind of, I don't even go hiking, but I like to read about people who do unusual things. I think perhaps I've finished reading about mountaineering books, but I've read about Everest and about Annapurna and, you know, just all the different extraordinary things that men and women have done to go up these mountains. And one thing that I've come to understand in very obvious terms, that even if the mountain is very high, you seldom climb it like this. You seldom climb it in just one angle that goes straight up. And in fact, sometimes you go up and down and up and down, sometimes way around to the side, sometimes a long way off, and then you come back up. Sometimes you even lose sight of the goal, because whatever the terrain is like, it's not always possible to clearly see where you're going. But there's always this, you know, moving in a certain direction and a commitment to that reality. Now, what we have to understand on the spiritual path, and I think the American naivete about how easy it is to realize God is something that you all should absorb too. Why not? We have a God-realized master. We have a great technique. We have a line of avatars. We have a spiritual family. It's certainly going to work for us. Absolutely, it's going to work for us. But we also have to understand, and this is where I'm referring to what was happening last night, that the antithesis of the spiritual path is to be self-centered about it. What's in it for me? What am I getting from it? You know, and it's not merely, now, of course, it's true, we wouldn't do it if there wasn't satisfaction. But the desire that wants us to realize God is the desire to overcome the ego. So it's not selfish to want to realize God, because it's the desire to have no self. So that the passion for that, I know people get all mixed up in their minds on that one, but that's the simple answer to it. But there's another aspect, which is what I was referring to last night. Sometimes we go at our spiritual life in the worst stereotype of a merchant. A merchant has a lot of goods in his shop. He's perfectly willing to give them to you as long as you give him value back. And you're always trading. I recently bought some medicines at the chemist shop here, and the chemist in the shop was like somebody had written to Bollywood and said, give me a merchant to sit in this shop. He was perfectly helpful, but he was helpful exactly to the extent that you put rupees across the table with him. Perfectly honorable man, but you gave him the rupees, he gave you the stuff. And you could just feel that if you didn't have the rupees, you didn't get the stuff. That's just the way it was. And there was like no margin on that. Now, it's too easy on our spiritual path to get into what you would call merchant consciousness with God. Oh, I'll certainly meditate. I'll even do selfless service as long as I get value back. But the moment, you know, it doesn't feel so good, the moment my meditations are a little less blissful, the moment some of my karmic problems return, I was speaking of the honeymoon. I've done a lot of counseling for couples in the West, not so much now, but I used to do a lot. And I would say to couples, there's a certain point at which you actually finally realize who you're married to. I call that the point of thunk, when all of your imagination about what your life is going to be like finally comes down there, and you're sitting across the breakfast table and you realize, this is it. You know, what am I going to do? This is the rest of my life. You might not even be unhappy about it, but all your illusions are gone. We're now grown-ups. This is who we've got. We may have children. We have a life. It's a whole different reality than the dream. And as I say, that's not necessarily even, it's not bad. It's just factual. Now we're really on page one, and we have to go through every page of the book to get to the dream of whatever it is, or the promise of the spiritual life. If we're really going to be successful on our spiritual life, if being a Kriyaban, being part of Ananda, is not just a phase that you're going through, even though we know we're doing it because of the joy that it gives us, we have to take out of our mind that this is some kind of a bargain with God. That I'm going to do this amount of work and you're going to give me all these positive ease in my life, ending of hard karma, money, bliss, whatever it is. But we do this out of love and also out of duty. Duty in the sense that I was speaking of last night. When we advance from just being self-centered and trading, we are committed. Because deep in our hearts we know that we were born for this, and this is the highest and the truest path I can follow. And I'm going to reach the top of the mountain. I'm not asking now whether it's a beautiful meadow that I'm walking through. I'm not asking whether it's all just one straight shot and then it'll be over. I'm doing this because what else could I do? There's an exquisite story in the life of Jesus, where apparently at the end of a master's life, they often understand that, you know, things will change when the master leaves. And so they often do what Yogananda himself called a little bit of house cleaning. There are disciples who had enough good karma to be able to stick with it while the guru was present. But once the guru is gone, they're going to have to go in a little bit more of a worldly cycle before they can come back. Swami Kriyananda writes, because he was there at the end of Yogananda's life, that in the last year or so, a lot of the monks left. Really hard tests came, and a lot of them left. And Yogananda said, Divine Mother's doing a little house cleaning. And Swami Kriyananda said, oh, is that what's happening? Because he couldn't understand it. He didn't realize that Master's life was almost over. He wasn't mature enough, didn't have a perspective. In the life of Jesus Christ, which of course his life ended so dramatically with the crucifixion and then later the resurrection, but you know, the followers of Jesus were suddenly profoundly threatened by the power structure around. Jesus himself was arrested. The other disciples were afraid that they would also be arrested. And Jesus knew this was coming, and he knew that he needed to have only those disciples who would have the strength to go through it, because that was the power that would carry it forward. So he started challenging them in a very difficult way. The most famous line, which you may all know, he said, eat my body and drink my blood. Now, later, everybody explained the body is the bread of communion, the blood is the wine, which is not actually the explanation. The body is the Om vibration, the blood is the Christ consciousness. And eat means to take it into yourself and become. Drink means to take it into yourself and become. That's what he really meant. But that's not what he said. Eat my body, drink my blood. Just imagine, You've been coming to see Keshava and Daya for many years, and suddenly one Sunday morning, they tell you to eat my body and drink my blood. Yeah, you can see it right there, can't you? In the Bible, I love this line. The Bible, the disciples said one to another, this is a hard teaching. They just like you would say, you would walk out of here, you would stand at the tea table, you would make sure that they weren't listening, and you would say, this is crazy, what are they saying? And then it says in the Bible, many walked with him no more. Many disciples became so bewildered and confused that they left. You would be standing at the tea table, and a couple of you might link your arms and say, we're gone and we're never coming back. Let's see if Diana is as crazy as these folks are, you know? But just in a human way. So they began to scatter. Now, Jesus turned to his disciple Peter, and the Catholic Church gives a different significance to this exchange than Master does. He turns to his disciple Peter. He says to Peter, will you also leave me? And in the Bible, it doesn't say that Jesus gave any explanation or said anything else. Just looked at this man who had been his friend all through it and said, what are you going to do? Like that. And Peter's answer was this. Where could I go? Now, he didn't say, oh, I understand completely. You're talking symbolically, and I mean, they're confused, but I understand. He didn't say anything like that. He said, where could I go? Now, what then Jesus said is, thou art, Peter, a rock, and upon this rock I will build my church. Catholics therefore claim that Peter was the first pope of the Catholic institution. I don't mean to be rude, but that's a preposterous explanation. What Master said is that Jesus saw that Peter understood intuitively, and because of that intuition, the church he could build was the church of divine realization. The chakras are the temple. Now, let me take this apart even more, because it's extremely important. The way I read that, I don't think Peter understood any more than anyone else did what the heck Jesus meant. And the way Swami explains it is this. What was being tested was not whether Jesus was in fact a self-realized master. What was being tested was the disciples' faith in their own experience of Jesus, and whether or not the faith they had in their own experience was sufficient for them to hold on even in a moment of confusion, hold on against the desertion of their friends, hold on against the fact that I don't really know right this minute what he's saying, but I know who he is and I know what he means to me. Now, we're not in the moment with the avatar, but we're here on this spiritual path. And what we have to work with on a deeper and deeper level is, why am I committed to this? What does this mean to me? Am I here just because, oh, look, when I meditate, I have all these bells and whistles, and I, you know, I always feel Master's presence with me. Wonderful. But is that why I'm here? And what if I come into hard times? What if my best friend, who's been in every level class with me, suddenly gets swept up in Maya and goes away? Will I go with them? What if somebody comes and tells me, actually, these people aren't really what you think they are. They really are doing all these other things like this. Well, I just say, oh, no, maybe I'm confused. Do you believe in your own intuitive commitment to this? And why are you here? When Peter answered Jesus, it was, you're my master. I don't have any idea either what you're doing right now. But I don't need to know, because what I do know tells me that this is where I belong. And that's why the answer was so perfect. Where else could I go? What possible alternative is there for me now that I have found this? And don't ever imagine for a moment that you're set forever. You know, faith is something that you build a certain power of intuitive faith. And then a wave comes that's a little bigger than your faith and tries to knock you off of it. And you root yourself stronger and stand stronger against that experience. And you know, okay, I've been tested in this way. I've been tested in that way. There's a very touching story that Swamiji relates about himself and Master and Dr. Lewis. Dr. Lewis was Yogananda's first disciple in America, and apparently he had some unusual personality qualities that sometimes caused dissonance with other people. And Swami Kriyananda had heard some complaints about Dr. Lewis, and he thought he was being helpful by telling Master that people were concerned in this way or that way. But when Master heard Swami say something against Dr. Lewis, Master looked him in the eye and he said, "When you have passed the spiritual test that Doctor has passed, then you can speak." And it was so touching to me, first the guru's loyalty to his disciple, and also the realization that step by step by step, don't worry about the little things. All those people climbing Everest, you know, they didn't care about what their hair looked like and whether they showered recently. You know, they had just one objective, and things became quite, really kind of loony, you know, toward the end of those climbs. But they saw where they were going, and they were going. And so in our spiritual lives, pay attention to every true moment that you have. Not because you're thinking these moments will, I'll have these forever. But remind yourself every day why you are on this path and what you know, not what people have told you. It's very important, Sister Gyanamata said, to base your spiritual life on the solid rock of what you know from your own experience. And even if that's very small, you know, even if it's a very small reality, you'll be safer there than if you sort of try to spread yourself out. Just stand someplace that you absolutely cannot challenge. And remind yourself every day, where would I go? Don't let this sort of memory of what your life was like before you found Master Kriya Yoga, the spiritual path, whatever level you are on this, Don't let the memory fade of what life was like without it. Because otherwise, when you get a little tested, you'll sort of nostalgically think, oh, everything was fine before. No, everything wasn't fine before. Nothing will ever be good again. Swamiji said, success on the spiritual path, one of the primary qualities is that you realize that staying on the spiritual path, he said, is a matter of life or death. Life or death. There's no middle ground. I will be loyal to my master and my practice and my spiritual family to the end of my life. Whatever comes that challenges me, I will just answer it with, Lord, where would I go? And upon this rock, God will build the temple of self-realization. God bless you.